You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Craig Burley and Ali Moreno as Tottenham Hotspur pick up the baton from Bayern Munich to give us something to talk about, thank goodness, during International Week, as, of course, on Sunday they confirmed the exit of Antonio Conte. Today we heard from Daniel Levy for the very first time. It was brief. Here's what he had to say. We have 10 Premier League games remaining and we have a fight on our hands for a Champions League place. We all need to pull together. Everyone has to step up to ensure the highest possible finish for our club and amazing, loyal supporters. Frank Leboeuf is here, James Ollie as well.
It's slightly disappointing, that statement, isn't it? I was kind of half hoping he would have said, look, at the end of the day, I just couldn't stand that little whining Italian.
Yes.
Continually moaning and groaning. And, and so I decided to get shot of him because he was a pain in the backside. And by the way, the football was horrible to watch. I think that would have been more to the point.
I am surprised that you're not the public relations officer for Spurs.
Oh, I'd love Craig to be a public relations officer anywhere. I think that would be wonderful. That would be very exciting. Kind of a bland statement. That's it. Champions League, which we did last year. We get knocked out. Same old.
Look, roll back the tape. I think everybody, almost everybody said at the time of his hiring, this 99.9% is going to end in tears. Because Tottenham were never going to give him, and there's blame on both sides, but this has been Tottenham's mantra. They were never going to give him what he wanted. They gave him some.
Yeah, he spent a lot of money.
I mean, Kulusevski came in, Bentancur came in, Richarlison came in. He had Harry Kane.
Yep.
Longley came in off the back of a poor time at Barcelona, I'll give you that. So, and there was one or two others. So, he had something to work with. But it wasn't enough for him. He just had it in his head that he needed more, he wanted Tottenham to spend, but that's never been what they've been about. So this was always going to end like this, always.
James, was this doomed from the start?
To some extent, it was. I mean, Antonio Conte turned the job down in the summer of 2021, because there was a fundamental disagreement about where that squad was at that moment. Daniel Levy felt that by appointing Jose Mourinho before Antonio Conte in sacking Mauricio Pochettino, that they only needed a winner, someone who could get them over the line. For 5 years under Pochettino, they'd made fantastic progress. They got to a League Cup final. They got to a Champions League final. They were playing fantastic football. But Pochettino had never won anything. That group of players had never won anything. And he felt the only thing that was missing was a winner, which is why they went for Jose Mourinho. That didn't work. And then when they got rid of Mourinho, they bundled through to the summer with Ryan Mason. They then tried to get Antonio Conte then under the same principle, basically, that this squad is pretty much there. We might need one or two, but basically the belief internally at Spurs was that they were virtually there in terms of challenging for the major honours, and they just needed a manager, an elite top-level manager, to get them over the line. Now, Conte turned that job down because at the time he said to them, actually, I think you're quite a long way off. I think you need to spend quite a lot of money. I think there needs to be quite a significant turnover of players. And at that time, they couldn't find an agreement, so they walked away. Spurs went through a number of other options before they ended up at Nuno Espirito Santo. That lasted 4 months. And then Spurs thought, actually, maybe Conte was right. Maybe we need to make the changes that he's suggesting. Maybe the squad's not as good as we thought it was. And there is this marriage of inconvenience, really, where Conte's taking a job, a step down for him. He's used to taking a team that's maybe 90, 95% of the way to being title contenders or title winners. You know, you think about Juventus, Inter Milan, Chelsea, their pedigree is winning titles. Tottenham have not won a major trophy or major title. They've not won the league title since 1961. That is not a team that Conte would typically take over. But he thought, actually, if they're prepared to make the changes that I think they need to make, then let's give it a go. And unfortunately, as Craig said right at the start there, Antonio Conte never fully bought into the idea. Spurs never fully bought into the idea that Antonio Conte was suggesting that they needed to make all these changes. They both had one foot in, one foot out, and it's ended 16 months later with no trophies and a load of turmoil.
Frank, can the players smell that in the dressing room, that the commitment isn't 100% there?
I don't think so. I think the players, you know, when they see the names coming and say, and some names came, you know, they maybe feel that there is something going on, that something is getting better. Maybe it's not the name they were expecting, but that the club is investing and they try to please the coach. But what I think they smelled is the fact that Antonio Conte didn't want them to stay. That most of the players that were there weren't accepted by the coach. That's what it is. And maybe it's why he lost the dressing room. When you feel that your coach only wants stars, only wants players who can cost a lot and change you, you don't want to give 100% to him. That's the thing. It didn't work. What was his job at first? It makes sure that team can work and increase him by buying other players. But he didn't do that. He said, well, you know, the players are not good enough. Those players that I see are not good enough. I want to buy some other players. So you lose a dressing room. That's what it is. I don't like that type of thinking, the football, because it's the easiest way. Give me 500 million, I'm gonna create the best team in the world. I can do that as well. I don't need to be named Conte to do that. It's an easy way to build a team. I think it's a harder way to try to make the player that you have better than they've been. That's the real job that the coach has to achieve.
We talked about a lot of those post-match press conferences were becoming so repetitive in that everybody else was being blamed but himself.
Yeah, taking a flamethrower at everything inside, everything that was around him, everything but indeed Antonio Conte. And I think there's something to be pointed out here about Antonio Conte. While it is true and well documented that Spurs have had their difficulties and failures as a club and failures to invest enough money and failures to be an ambitious brand, a more ambitious club, right, we know this. He knew this. Everybody knows this. It's also true that as successful as Antonio Conte has been as a manager, seemingly everywhere that he's been, this is how he has left. Mm-hmm. Right? He has left fighting with everybody. Malcontent, yelling and screaming, having this sort of car crash meltdown, and then see you guys later. So yes, you have on one side a club that has had its shortcomings. And on the other side, you have a manager who continuously says, it's everybody else but me. And you know what? Because it's everybody else but me, I'm burning everything down. I'm out of here. See you guys later. But it's not specific to Spurs. He has done this just about everywhere he's been to. So this is part of his personality. It's part of the package deal. So if you go after Antonio Conte, you know that there's going to be a burst. There's going to be a jump for the first year or so. And then after that, there's going to be a meltdown. So when the meltdown happens, we shouldn't be surprised. This is who Antonio Conte is.
James, why did he go for Stellini and not Ryan Mason?
Well, Stellini's got quite a good record. Obviously, Antonio Conte's had gallbladder surgery. He was away for longer than was anticipated. There was also the Champions League ban that he had to serve for that final group game in Marseille, and Stellini was on the touchline there, masterminded for the win over Manchester City. The players like him. It's a little bit surprising from the point of view that normally when a manager goes, the coaching staff that came in with him leave as one. So I guess that is a slight concern. But, you know, Ryan Mason is a very inexperienced manager. He had those handful of games when Mourinho left. But, you know, really you'd want somebody who's got a little bit more of a control over the players. And I think part of the reason why this Conte decision has taken as long as it has, you know, That post-match press conference against Southampton is, what, 9-10 days ago now, and it's only just been confirmed last night that he's actually gone. I think part of that was that there were people at Spurs who wanted to think, well, could we try and muddle through to the end of the season? You know, we could talk about the mess that Spurs are in. They are actually still fourth at the moment. Mm. And Champions League qualification would be a successful season for them, certainly from this point. So I think there was there were certainly one or two senior figures at the club who thought, well, look, could we try and find a way through where we accept, look, this is going to end in the summer, but let's try and muddle through. But actually, in the end, they just felt that the chasm was too big between the manager and the players, and obviously at boardroom level, the disagreements there were too great to continue. And I guess Stellini's probably as close a segue from Conte to a summer appointment as you could get, given the work that he's done with the players and some of that expertise that will have rubbed off from working with Conte.
Spurs have to work out what they are. Right. If what's the point bringing in a manager who bangs his fist on the table when he doesn't get the money, when you know you're not going to give him what he wants? Mm. I get it, there was a small part thinking he might have got you over the line. That was foolhardy, because the line is quite a distance away, the end line, where Arsenal and City are. So they got to work out, if we're not the biggest spenders, and they're not, and they're probably not going to be, we have to mould somebody, find somebody who will work with this squad, with this budget, and try and gradually bridge that gap over a longer period of time.
Who would you, Craig, if you were Daniel Levy and you had carte blanche, who would you bring in?
I wouldn't go back to Pochettino. I just never think it's good to go back. I mean, Thomas Frank has done an amazing job at Brentford with their recruitment has been excellent.
Yeah.
Well known the way they do it. I mentioned Kompany the last time. You know, there's a lot. I mean, you can take Zinedine Zidane off that list. It's never happened. Yeah, it's never happened.
That's our producer for that one.
It's never happened in a million years.
What about Nagelsmann? What about?
If he's prepared to work with a budget that's not going to be that of Man City, Man United and one or two other, Chelsea, then fine.
Yeah.
But there's no point bringing somebody in again that's going to say, oh, look at United spending, look at City spending. Why? Because unless this club is sold, then there's no possibility, there's a very little possibility of that changing. And so the whole, and I think James touched on this the last time, he was on about some of the players that were recruited, like Jed Spence. There's just not... And then what's happened to him, and there's just no common sense. They just keep seeming to put a sticking plaster over it, and then another one, and then another one. It's a really difficult situation to be in. But if they're not going to be big spenders, which they are not, they have to find somebody that's working to work long-term with that budget.
Something that you just said and something that Frank brought up as well. You need a manager that is actually willing to coach.
Right. So who on that list, Ali?
I would, and this is a profile that I would go after. A guy like Vincent Kompany.
Right.
Who would be excited about this opportunity, that would be excited about this challenge, that this is not a project that he already has a headache about. It's actually a headache that he wants. It's an excitement that he's working for. It's a position that would be, I think, certainly a step up for him, but something that would challenge him to coach, to manage, to actually get out on the field and how can I make this play better? How can I make that player better? How can I make us better? Right? Not just say we're going to buy ourselves a team, but this is a group that we have in place. It's not going to change radically. And I think this is the point that Frank was making earlier. Improving a player. Imagine that. That the job for a manager is to improve a player. Yes. That's part of coaching. That's part of managing. That's part of getting a group together, putting your ideas into the group, and somehow putting those things together, and then you make a better product. But in order to do that, you have to have a willingness to work with what you have, not just show up and say, no, I'm too good for this. I think that was the approach of Conte, so I would look for a different profile and a guy that would be excited to be there.
So
a
company like has completed a complete 360 at Burnley, you'd be thinking that he could do the same, obviously.
Why are you bringing that up, Dan?
James, who would you pick on that list?
Well, I feel that it's maybe two steps for someone like Vincent Kompany. He's only just started his managerial career, and Craig's right. Tottenham have to work out where they are and what they feel they want to be as a club. And where they thought they were in 2019 and in 2021 was they felt they had the squad and they needed a manager who could have that savvy, that gravitas, that know-how to just get them over the line and start winning trophies. I don't think they're there now. I think they've regressed. And really, we're looking at a Tottenham, almost a kind of progressive appointment where they're thinking, do we get a younger manager? And to answer your question, Thomas Frank, I think on that list, fits the bill, proven in the Premier League, has really exceeded all expectations with Brentford. Would accept, I think, working with a budget and would acknowledge the fact that he is competing, you know, at a disadvantage with the very top clubs, but would embrace that challenge and really try and take it on. And I know that there were admirers at Spurs of Thomas Tuchel, but that never got anywhere because, of course, you know, he went to Bayern very quickly, and I'm not saying that that was close or anything like that, but I think that the fact that they were even looking at someone like Tuchel suggests that there's still people at Spurs who think, yeah, we're only a couple of players away. We're only, right, you know, maybe one or two changes or a top manager away. They're not. They're further away than that. They really are further away than that. It's difficult to see Harry Kane staying there beyond the summer. Not saying he's going to leave, but it's really, really hard to see with his contractual situation, the state of flux that that club is in. If Harry Kane was to leave, that is a landmark moment for that club. You think about Heung-min Son. I think he's turned, is he 30 now, 29, 30? He's getting to, you know, an age where you can't necessarily rely on him week in, week out to go and carry a team, particularly on his own if Kane left. They are in at an absolute crossroads, Tottenham as a club. And I think in that situation, they need to realise where they are and look at someone like Thomas Frank, maybe Roberto De Zerbi. Might be a bit early for him, but he's had such a great season at Brighton. You think one of those younger, progressive managers, as I say, able to work within a budget, accept the limitations of the club where they are, and really accept the reality of the situation around them. You know, Spurs...
Nagelsmann is young, James. What about Nagelsmann?
Well, yeah, but, you know, Nagelsmann, I understand that he's a bit of a talking horse at the moment because of, you know, the job that he did at Bayern to some extent, but he did get sacked by Bayern, and there were a lot of conversations in Germany about whether he could handle big players. He obviously has no experience in the Premier League. I'm not criticising the guy as he's 35. He's younger than I am. He's got a lot of time ahead of him in terms of learning the game and improving and becoming a top manager. But he's no guarantee. He's not in the Tuchel. You know, there's a reason why Bayern got rid of him for Thomas Tuchel. He's not in the Tuchel, even Antonio Conte bracket of, well, we kind of know what we're getting here. You know, we know what we're going to get. We know, all things being equal, we're going to get someone who's going to deliver us trophies. I know that didn't happen with Conte, but he's done it everywhere else other than Tottenham. So I still think that's a little bit of a gamble. Would be an exciting appointment, yes, would fit the kind of progressive profile, perhaps. But I think when Nagelsmann's got the reputation he has, and perhaps Real Madrid might come available. I know Carlo Ancelotti's got another year on his contract at Real Madrid. But, you know, you think about whether that deal might be open to him, whether Chelsea get rid of Graham Potter. He's also someone else that Chelsea admire, Nagelsmann. You know, he might have his options. He might think, well, particularly if Tottenham don't finish in the top four, would I even want to go there for a year in the Europa League? And if their best player, Harry Kane, is going to leave? You know, it is one of the biggest summers in Tottenham's history now. And this appointment, they really have to get right. And I really think, as Craig said, they have to work out what club they are and realise where they are at the moment. And that's why if it was me, I'd be thinking a Thomas Frank, a kind of progressive appointment who accepts that reality and could really take them on and transform the team.
Frank, who's top of your list?
I will go for, like Ali, for Vincent Kompany or Thomas Frank because, like their biggest enemies, Tottenham have to realise that they are at the level where Arsenal were like a year or two ago, where no big player wanted to come. And it was also the case a little bit for Manchester United last season before Ten Hag took over and changed the mentality of the dressing room and the mentality on the field. It's the same with Arteta working hard with Arsenal, changing some players, improving, because we are talking about coaches working with players and making them good. And we can see Xhaka coming back to his best, or maybe being at his best, you know, for once, you know, incredible season from him, where he was booed by the fans. I think Tottenham has to know where they stand. And right now what they need a coach who can handle the dressing room without buying players who maybe are not the top, but are good enough to come, but right now don't want to come. So work with the team that you have. Make company work or Thomas Frank work. And the problem with Nagelsmann that I have is he will have an enormous pressure to come over because he failed for Munich with Munich, and it will be his last chance to stay at the rank. His people are supposedly putting him. That's the thing. If he doesn't if he's not successful with Tottenham, that would be the end for him. He would drop and will have a hard time to go back to where he was. So I will go for company. I will go for Thomas Frank, where I guess they have a big philosophy of working hard with players and willing to improve the attitude and the level of the players. That's what Tottenham needs.
The other side of the coin is unless I'm missing something, where's the youngsters coming through?
At Spurs?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there are youngsters at Spurs, but top clubs. Arsenal brought three or four youngsters through in the last couple of years. City with their huge squad. Cole Palmer, Rico Lewis, Harvey Elliott at Liverpool. There are others. You know, Chelsea brought a few youngsters in. Where's the youngsters coming through?
Yep.
It's not just about money. Where's your youth team, your reserves, your under-21s, whatever it is these days? Where's these kids coming through that's going to supplement the squad? I'm not seeing them.
A lot more discussion then on Spurs and the future of Antonio Conte and Nagelsmann on the next edition of the Gavin Jules podcast, which in fact is available to listen to now.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ruthless, bang for our buck, Bucks fizz. This, of course, the headlines after England's 2-0 victory over Ukraine. Saka putting in another fantastic man of the match performance. Frank is with us. James, you were at the game, which is kind of all about now. We've seen over these last two matches the emergence we knew already. How good Saka and Bellingham are. We know how key they're going to be now for the future success for England.
Yeah, I was at both games, actually, and I thought Bellingham was really good in Naples in the first half. I mean, that first 45 minutes against Italy in Italy was one of the best halves of football that they've played under Gareth Southgate. They lost control of it in the second half, and Italy, pushed for that equaliser and ran them close. But I think the fact that England held on there, and then in the second half of the game against Ukraine, okay, albeit a different challenge, obviously, at home against a weaker team, but they controlled the game much better. And I think if you put those two performances together, what it really showed was, I think we already know that Jude Bellingham is going to hold down a position in England's midfield for a long time. But it's probably easy to forget that Bukayo Saka was certainly not a year ago guaranteed to be starting in this this England team. Mm. Southgate habitually these days plays 4-3-3, and obviously Harry Kane plays for the middle, but the wide positions either side of him were very much up for grabs. But I think what Saka's done in the last, well, at the World Cup and really in this international window has just translated his Arsenal form into an England shirt, and he really now has nailed down that right-sided position, and it's now on the rest. It's now on the Madisons, the Grealishes, Sterling, Rashford, to try and get in on that left-hand side to make up that front three. What Saka's done in the last sort of 12, 18 months has been absolutely phenomenal for England. He's one of their key players now.
And he was one of the ones that missed a penalty at the Euros.
Yes, yep.
Which makes it, I think, even more commendable, because obviously there would have been a lot of stupid online abuse. You know, people, fans are fickle, sometimes they don't forget. So to put that behind you, that big, huge disappointment, and then kick on your career in the manner in which he has, brilliant.
Do you want to play a game?
Oh, here we go.
I know what the game is.
What's
a horrible game.
What's the game?
Because it's a horrible game where people have to always pick between two players.
No. It's a different dance.
All right. Are you saying I've jumped the gun?
You have jumped the gun.
Okay.
Jude Bellingham's 19. How many senior starts has he made?
Well, he went to Dortmund at 16. I think he had played for Birmingham. Not sure how many of it. 16. He's 19 now?
Yes.
Senior starts, you mean for club?
Club and country.
Okay, I'm going to say 100.
Carry the two.
One second.
That's right. Uh-huh. International break's almost over.
Uh-huh. Yes, slow down.
Here we go.
127.
Not bad. 158 senior starts at 19 years of age.
Wow.
Which is incredible.
I wanted to play.
When you compare it to someone like Beckham or Scholes, who had barely made double figures at that age, James, just shows where he is. And it was interesting, one of that conversation between him and Gerrard saying, look, he's so much more ahead than I was at that age.
Well, I think Gerrard had one cap, two caps at the same age as Jude Bellingham for England. So, you know, he is a long way ahead of Gerrard, where, you know, comparably in terms of age. And really, it's his maturity. It's, you know, it's the composure, authority in midfield that England have lacked, I think, at tournaments for a long time. You think about even the Euro 2020 final, where, you know, in the second half, Italy really controlled the game in midfield. Verratti, Jorginho started just moving it around, and England started giving the ball away. They've missed it. Go back to 2018, Croatia semi-final, same thing, took the lead, couldn't keep the ball, gradually got tired, lost control, lost the game. England have missed that kind of player who's got that composure, that authority, but more than that, he's someone who can bounce off players and drive forward and really take a team through the gears in central midfield. And look, Declan Rice and Calvin Phillips did an awful lot right in the Euros, Euro 2020, but they're not those kind of players. They're quite safety first. They're not progressive in their passing. They don't have the ability to transition in the same way that Bellingham does. They don't have that dynamism in midfield, that X factor. And I think they've been trying to keep a lid on it, you know, England, in terms of they didn't put him up for any media during the tournament in Qatar. And I think they've been trying to sort of just slowly get him into the fray so that Germany could be his time, obviously a country that he's playing his club football in at the moment. But I don't think they can keep the lid on him anymore. You know, you can't keep him out of that team now. And he's not quite doing it for 90 minutes yet. I think in the second half against Italy, he faded a little bit. He's played, obviously, a lot of football this season. That's the smallest criticism I could give of a 19-year-old who's got the world at his feet. But if he can start dominating games like that for 90 minutes and just extend what he's already doing for a slightly longer period, he is going to be one of the biggest assets that England could have for the next 10, maybe even 15 years.
Frank, obviously, maybe an English perspective, we're excited, we're biased.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you want to pour scorn on this at all?
You know that guy, you know, would love to see him play for Chelsea, but I have doubt that he would come, but that guy is...
he wants to win something, Frank.
Yeah, well, you know, well... No, but that... Do you know what? I like what I heard from the guys, you know, but to compare him, already comparing him to Steven Gerrard, I think you have to wait for the end of his career to know if he was better to Steven Gerrard. Yes, he's ahead of Gerrard, you know, in terms of games played, maybe goals scored, whatever it is. But Steven Gerrard has so much influences into the game of Liverpool, but also the national team, was crucial at the end of the game. Sometimes scoring goals were very important for the national team, especially, but also Liverpool. That is very hard for me to say where Bellingham stands comparing to Gerrard right now. It's hard for me to say, but definitely that guy is the future of any club wants to hire him. Is why I was talking about Chelsea, but especially the future of the national team. I mean, that's crazy. What you have right now, and I pray for him to never be injured in his career, but you have one of the brightest player ever, you know, in your national team, for sure.
He'll be all right, Real Madrid.
Yeah, he will. He is... We throw this description about midfielders around quite often, and it may not apply box to box. He is the definition of box to go. He is a guy that can be a presence in the attacking half, can score goals, will support the attack. James has mentioned his ability to drive with the ball. He can find a pass. There's maturity to his game. And then you know what else he has? He has fight in him. He has a tackle in him. A guy who will win a ball, who will go on a sliding challenge, who will win a 50-50 ball, and once he wins the ball, will drive with that ball forward and then find a pass. Not only does he find the pass, but then support the play and get on the end of service. Look, if you were to have a prototype for a box-to-box midfielder, young midfielder right now in the world, is Jude Bellingham. This is who you model your game after. You're a young kid and you're coming up. You want to be a box-to-box guy? It is Jude Bellingham that you look at because he is the profile of player. There is everything to like about him. The maturity is something that we have highlighted in our coverage of Bundesliga. It's something that is very obvious to see that sometimes with a lot of experienced players around him in Borussia Dortmund, he's the one making decisions when to speed up the play, when to slow it down. That sort of personality is not something you learn. It's something that you have, and he has that in bunches. I think Jude Bellingham is going to be great for Real Madrid for a decade and a half. This guy is something special.
He's still learning.
Yeah.
He is still learning.
Yeah.
Do you want to play another game?
Oh, here
well,
no, we go.
I was going to just make one point on it. And when he learns to time his... And he's still... When he really learns to time his runs into the box, that's when you'll see the quota of goals going up.
Right.
It's all about the timing. He's got the physique. He's got the energy. He's got the engine. When he really fine-tunes the timing of those runs, he'll be 20 goals a season.
Who are you picking, Bellingham or Saka? As you brought out before.
Well, why would I pick between them? Why would I pick between them when I enjoy the two?
Because we're in the playground. We're in the playground now and you've got first pick.
If we're in the playground, I'd come over and sort you out.
Well, yes, I know. Oh. I'd run to the teacher and say, he's doing it again.
Big, horrible guy with no teeth. I love both of them, clearly. But if you gave me one of them, if you said I can only have one of them for the next 10 years... And I hate this, but it's what we do here constantly. And Messi and Ronaldo are not around to do it anymore.
Ronaldo's scoring goal, Craig.
Apparently upset Ronaldo fans again last night.
Twitter, oh my God. Everyone's anyway, very angry at
just
us.
Getting
oh,
there,
my God.
It's just by a smidge, I would take Jude Bellingham.
Right, here we go.
Just by a smidge.
Meanwhile, football will return properly, of course, this weekend.
Hold on.
What?
Don't just put me in the mire.
Uh-huh. Why?
Ask other people.
Other people are going to say the same. There we go.
Okay. Has everybody said the same?
No, I assume so. I don't know.
You just shall not text everybody.
Sorry? No.
Half a job.
No one's texted anybody. I just assumed.
Text me.
Hey, we only care about your opinion, Craig. We care about your opinion.
producer texted me today, I was sat at home with my feet up, he said, who do you prefer?
Did he?
And I just presumed...
I'm surprised he did that.
If I'd have known that he hadn't texted everybody, I'd have said sod off.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, well, you're out the loop.
There we go. Well, there you
so
go.
What's I didn't get that text message either.
I don't want to be in that loop, to be honest. I'm quite happy. Right, let's move on, shall we? Manchester City in action against Liverpool this weekend as the Premier League returns. Of course, a big month for City, as it is everyone, I suppose. Phil Foden out, of course, with appendicitis. How big a blow is this, James, do you feel?
Well, probably not as big a blow as it could have been, given that, you know, Jack Grealish has been preferred in that position for Manchester City for a while. I think there have been signs that Foden was starting to rediscover some of his best form. And look, I mean, Guardiola is as much about trying to be unpredictable on the team sheet these days as he is anything else. So I guess it reduces one of his options in, you know, in the wide areas. But I think the fact that the Grealish had a rest against Ukraine for England, he only came on for the final few minutes, means he should be fresh for that game. So it doesn't weaken Manchester City particularly. So, you know, it's a blow, obviously. And, you know, a fully fit and firing Phil Foden is a threat to anybody. He's obviously done a lot of damage to Liverpool in the past, but I don't think it will make or break their chances of winning the game.
Not the end of the world?
No. Mahrez, Grealish, been much better, as Jim said. You know, Julian Alvarez can play out there. Cole Palmer can come in, the youngster. Bernardo Silva can play out there. I mean, there's a whole host of them that can go and play wide.
Yeah.
So he was just getting back to... I wouldn't say his best, but he was starting to look sharp again after a downturn. So it's unfortunate, but no, I don't think it's going to make a big difference to Man City.
Meanwhile, for Manchester United, of course, all the talk is about being what's going on off the pitch, James, with the Glazers accepting bids to buy the club. Where do we stand on that at the moment?
Well, we're in the middle of a bidding war, and or at least a bidding war that is trying to be generated by the Glazers. And... make no mistake, the club is for sale and they are trying to drum up and drive up the price. That's what's going on. And all these sort of conflicting messages about, oh, is there a deadline? Is there not a deadline? Has someone met the deadline? Have they not met the deadline? Or maybe they don't want to sell it. Oh, they might do. Or maybe they'll sell a stake. Maybe they won't. All of this is just a game. It's all a ploy to try and drive up the price. The fact of the matter is that they want $6 billion, which if you talk to most people in football who deal with these kind of big club sales will say that that is an inflated price. And the only way you get anywhere near it is if you get a state-owned backer, and obviously there's a Qatari bid involved here, excited enough to start paying, you know, the going rate, the talking shop for the club. And, you know, I think most of the serious, credible alternatives... people like Jim Ratcliffe, I know that Elliott Management are talking about trying to take a stake in the club. They obviously had ownership of AC Milan for a while. Anyone who's got a background in football and football ownership knows that Manchester United at the moment is not worth $6 billion. You know, Chelsea went for 2.5 plus a 1.75 billion guarantee that they would redevelop the stadium. Old Trafford doesn't necessarily need knocking down, but it needs a huge amount of work being done to it. And there are people, there are architects, there are schools of thought that say, actually, maybe it does need knocking down and rebuilding. The training ground, Carrington, is a long way behind some of the contemporary Premier League clubs. So there's an awful lot of money that needs to be spent on the infrastructure, let alone the squad and the playing staff to get them up to compete with Manchester City. So they're not worth $6 billion. What is going on here is trying to drive the price up and really, really get somebody to stick their head above the parapet and say, well, actually, maybe we'll go to 5, maybe we'll go to 5.25, maybe we'll go to 5.5. And then it's FOMO, it's fear of missing out. And the other parties who are interested maybe say, well, actually, hang on a minute, if they're going to say it, well, maybe we'll go to it. That's what's going on at the moment. It's cat and mouse, and nobody wants to commit the figure that the Glazers have put on the club to force a quick sale.
James, that's it now. There's no football for a few days. What are you going to do with yourself?
I'm going to take this back to John Lewis because you slagged it off earlier. So.
Oh, no. Wait, it's beautiful. I don't know why you buy a mirror with all that paint on it.
Artistic.
And as if you had any choice in buying that in the first place, James. Thank you very
Absolutely
much.
Correct.
Much appreciated. Just a reminder, speaking of Manchester United, it was confirmed today they will take on Wrexham this summer in San Diego. That game will take place on July the 25th. At 10:30 Eastern. Now, for more details on that tie, go over to our website.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Well, should we talk about some football that took place today? France took on Ireland. They won by 1-0. It was a great goal, wasn't it? From Benjamin Pavard, proving to be the difference between the two sides. Frank Leboeuf, who used to play for France, joins us. It's confirmation there. The French have won their opening two matches.
Oh, Gibraltar bottom. There's a shock.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's all about...
Poor Danny Higginbottom. The Dutch then 3-0 beating Gibraltar. But let's focus, shall we, on France, who laboured somewhat in this game, Frank.
Well, you know, we can be disappointed with the performance of the national team comparing with what we saw against the Dutch, where they were absolutely fantastic and they did what they had to do and with the level that they can be. And today, offensively especially, I don't know what Deschamps tried to do, you know, picking Giroud instead of keeping maybe the three guys at front were so fast, so impossible to cope with, trying to get maybe Giroud to have a fight with the stronger center backs, which I think it wasn't the situation he should have chosen. But he tried, you know. Colomwani wasn't at his best. Mbappe didn't seem to be good as well. It's only defensively what they did pretty well. They were lucky to score the goal because of a bad pass from some Irish guy. The Irish did well and fought with their strength and did what they had to do. But it wasn't enough for France. It was I wouldn't say an appalling performance, but it was a disappointing one. And lucky they had a fantastic goalkeeper called Mike Maignan, who made two great saves at the end. Otherwise, it should have been a draw.
Yeah, it was a couple of great saves, wasn't it?
Colony's name was that Irish guy.
Oh, there we go. Some Irish guy.
Gave the ball away. I mean, the Irish started passing the ball about in the first 10 minutes. I thought, well, they're going to have a go, and then the French just smothered them. And it was one-way traffic. But, yeah, they were lacklustre in front of goal. Why is Giroud still hovering about?
Why change it after the Dutch? Is it because they were so... I know the chicken curry, but, you know, they were still better.
Anyway, for the last 10 minutes, they were hanging on. And then the Irish just put a few subs on and they were piling some crosses into the box. And Frank's right, the keeper from my set piece made a great save. But you look at the two squads, and I mentioned it earlier, only four of the outfield players out of the 10 for the Irish actually play in the top level. Right. And one of those, Doherty, doesn't get a game for Atletico Madrid. The rest of them play in the Championship and one of the lads plays in the third tier for Derby. And yet... France just laboured, but is that not what France do during qualification? I see this a lot with France. The qualification is kind of a little bit boring and ponderous, and then it's almost like it doesn't get them up for it. No. And it's only the big stage, the World Cup, the Euros, where they really come to the fore.
To the point of Giroud, I think what's happening here with Deschamps is that he's finding the best way possible to try to transition out of the Giroud era, okay, with the French national team. And it's not easy to do because you didn't play him against the Netherlands and you're saying, all right, we'll put him in between the two center backs against Ireland, and then he's going to fight maybe because we're going to be crossing balls, we're going to have possession, he's going to get on the end of a header. But what ends up happening, to Frank's point, is that while Giroud has a place in this team and has had a place in this team and has been successful, when there is no space, right, that hold-up play that he's supposed to provide for guys like Antoine Griezmann, that space is no longer available. And so you need to find a space with quicker movement. And so if you have the speed of Kolumwani and Diaby on the outside and Mbappe, even though there may not be space on the outside, the quickness of their movement is going to create space for you so that then you can complete those little passes. I just don't think that Giroud has a place in this team any longer. Before, you didn't have players that could do the job. I think you now have players that can do the job and can give you something different. Not only the hold-up play, but can also give you quickness of movement. I think Kolomani can play the central role, Diaby on the right-hand side, then you have Mbappe on the left-hand side, Griezmann still as a playmaker. Now we're talking. It's a different picture. It's much easier to defend against a guy who's just stationary, as Giroud is most of the time, than a guy that is always moving, like Kolomani is.
The internationals continue tomorrow, by the way, as we say. Well, no, not oh God, Craig, because Scotland are taking on Spain.
Oh, God.
Maybe.
Well, help. Help.
Stevie will be joining us.
Hey. Hey, I'll be here.
To analyze that.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Barcelona against Real Madrid then is on, what's April the 5th, Thursday? Is that Thursday or Wednesday?
I say April the 5th. People look.
It's a Wednesday.
They can look.
3 p.m. Eastern, 24 hours before that, it's Athletic Club against Osasuna. Both of those games live on ESPN+. Surprise then in CONCACAF Nations League last night as Mexico could only manage a 2-2 draw against Jamaica. They remain, though, 2 points clear at the top of the table. And meanwhile, in Group D, the US men are in action tonight at 7:30 Eastern. They take on El Salvador. 2 points separate those two sides going into that clash.
Oh, that's tonight sorted.
Football Americas will follow that game, Craig. Be sure to join them. That game there will be live to give you instant analysis on what happened with that clash. I'm sure a lot of fallout as well from the Mexico match as well. And just a reminder, the Clásica then, Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund. Now, as you're on Plus, coverage will actually start 11:30 Eastern because they've got so much, you've got so much to talk about, Alan.
Absolutely.
And then it'll switch to ABC at midday. Be sure to check it out. That is it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Craig's off, unfortunately, tomorrow.
I really enjoyed the goals, though.
We will bring you the top 20 international goals on Wednesday. Fear not. Yep. Extra time is next.
Fortunately.
Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Frank and Ali here with us in the studio. Frank with us as well. How are you, Frank? How was your weekend?
That was great. I was on stage on Friday night, and Saturday and Sunday I enjoyed my time off and spent some time with my lovely wife. Easy peasy.
Oh, lovely, Frank.
Lemon squeezy.
Look at that.
How are you doing?
Beautiful. I was here.
Not you.
What do you mean?
I'm asking Frank.
He was on stage, wasn't he, for his play?
Doing what?
Leading the line. Being the star. Wearing underwear. Is that the one where you just wear your underwear, Frank?
At the end of the show, yes, I'm wearing the French national underwear. That's fantastic, you know.
The tricolour.
Very well, you know.
Cool. People pay for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Frank is in shape.
Yeah, French. Why are people all of a sudden saying that Nagelsmann will walk into the Spurs locker room and change the ways there? He's been knocked out by Villarreal in the Champions League, didn't win the Pokal last year, and is in second place with a great Bayern team.
Who's saying it?
I don't know, some people.
I can't control what people are saying.
Some people want Nagelsmann, don't they?
Yeah, but who's saying they'll walk in and change the whole grid? I mean, people just make things up. I've not said that. Did I sit here yesterday or Thursday when he was sacked and go, Nagelsmann will walk in there, change the mentality, change the shape, they'll win the league?
Well,
no, I didn't.
Some people are, apparently.
What's the question?
Well, some people have to listen what we are saying, you know.
Oh, you're right, Frank. You know your mic's open. What are you saying?
Well, I say that some people have to sometimes listen carefully to what we say, you know, and not try to extrapolate, you know, what we're saying. And I think, you know, we can add something in the contrary. Nagelsmann didn't lose one Champions League game with Bayern Munich.
No.
So you can say, you know, whatever you want. So whatever.
Well, he must have done.
Comes to it, you're
No, this year he has, and last year he did against Villarreal, the aforementioned Villarreal game.
I mean, I think we said if he's prepared to do work within a budget that he did at Leipzig.
Yes.
And Hoffenheim. And he's obviously a young man. And just so if he's prepared to go in there for a longer period, which I think he's shown he was prepared to do before, and not working with the big superstars because Harry Kane will leave if he's getting in about him.
Yes.
Then why would that not be a reasonable assumption that he's going to be on the list?
I know you don't pay any attention to your notifications, but did you have a look this morning from Ronaldo?
Well, I don't get notifications because I just turn these idiots off.
Right, okay. They woke up so angry today.
I know, but I did notice, actually, you know that little video I posted out from the Premier League the other day about the little boy who was ill?
Everton
and Jordan.
Yeah, beautiful Jordan Pickford.
It's a lovely story. And the little boy's dad died of cancer. Jordan Pickford and Everton really treated him brilliantly. And it was a terribly, quite an emotional video, actually.
Yes.
I think there was Real Madrid fans had posted beneath that this morning.
Really?
Yeah. So I hadn't just tweeted to me.
Right. They just saw you a tweet or something and just kind of...
responded to that video from last week and had, like, I mean...
I don't know. People, like, Ronaldo fans...
An idiot. You this. Yeah. Ronaldo, he could buy ESPN and throw you out. So one of them said that. One of them said, he's got so much money, he'll buy ESPN and all that sort of stuff.
I know.
But underneath a video of a young boy who's been battling cancer.
I had one guy, Dad, you hate Cristiano Ronaldo and Kay as well. What's Kay done there?
You hate Kay?
I hate Cristiano Ronaldo. I hate them all. How about you, Frank, and your DMs and your Instagram? I bet you Ronaldo haters there as well, yeah?
I had two guys, you know, saying that I was a dumb e-bip, that I didn't understand anything, that, you know, Ronaldo showed us, ESPN pundit, that we understand nothing about football because he scored a goal and it was fantastic, and that I will never be at Ronaldo's level, and I never been at this Ronaldo level, so why I talk about him? Well, whatever.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
It's funny, isn't it?
Because I'm stupid, I can't stop by answering people. And I say, well, you know, you're right. I've never been at his level. I won the World Cup, he didn't.
Yeah!
The guy got crazy. Hey.
That's kind of fingers. Hey. 5, 4, 3, hey. 2. It's amazing what triggers people. It's amazing what
triggers. That was funny. The guy got crazy. He got crazy after that.
I know, we didn't give him enough credit for scoring against Liechtenstein, who were 193rd in the
world. I mean, it's an amazing record, isn't it, in Korea, to play that amount of international caps. Come on. Let's batter him again.
Well, he scored against Luxembourg.
Yeah, exactly.
He got thrown out of Man United for what? Being consummate professional? No. Anyway.
For Ali, how good is Thiago Almada? Almeida?
Almada.
Almada. What do you think his ceiling is and where do you see a good fit for him being, club and all league? So at the moment he's at Atlantic United.
Yes, he is.
He and Argentina international?
Absolutely, yes.
Where's he going to go?
Well, he's not going to stay at Atlanta United longer.
I'm not anti-MLS bias as well.
Not at all. He scored a great goal.
Was it a free kick?
Yeah, free kick about, I guess it was last week. Beautiful goal. And a talented player, so much so that whatever you may think of Major League Soccer, usually players from Argentina do not find their way into the Argentina national team through Major League Soccer. We leave that to Venezuela.
Yes.
Right. Okay. If you're an Argentina international, usually you're not playing in Major League Soccer. It's not a knock on MLS. It's the reality. It's a fact. But he's been able to find his way into the national team, playing in Major League Soccer, not only playing with the national team, but just scored against Panama as well.
Yeah.
So there is something to be said about what he's been able to do. And the truth of the matter is that MLS will be a springboard for him, and he's going to end up somewhere in Europe. I would say La Liga would be a place.
How old is he?
Well, he's a very young kid. I believe he's a teenager. I think he's 19. And so, but here's the thing about him. There is a skill set that matches some of the things that happen quite naturally in La Liga, and he brings that sort of level. There's a technical ability. Obviously, he can hit a free kick. And there's a personality to his game that I think would fit quite nicely in La Liga.
Well, there we go. Yeah.
Jordan Morris scored 4 goals at the weekend.
Look at you.
Wow. Yeah. Craig, you're all over.
And Herc and Max Britos,
right.
I saw them tweeting about it today.
Okay.
For some reason, right, Jordan Morris scored 4 goals. That's all I know.
Right.
And people were getting very upset.
Why were they getting upset?
I don't know. I'm lost. I switched off at that
maybe,
part of the
maybe
movie.
Because he's not in the US men's national team setup.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that would be.
Because I saw Hercules and then Max got involved.
Craig, what a day you've had. You need golf back. You don't even
see
that.
See, when it's golf season and the weather's nice,
you have to deal with Max or Herc's Twitter.
Frank, Ireland played France tonight. For the first time in Ireland since 2009 when Henri did his thing.
Oh, no, the handball thing.
That was in Paris, or wasn't it?
I, as a teenager, went to the French embassy in Dublin and threw eggs and smoke bombs into the grounds.
I think I'd admit that.
What was the reaction in France in the days that followed?
Of course, Thierry Henry's famous handball that saw France qualify and Ireland not.
We were happy. We went through. No, that's funny that I saw media, you know, even saying that we should play the game again, you know, trying to go into that kind of thing where, you know, it's done and you know that nothing is going to change and it is what it is. And it was unfair from Thierry Henry to do the handball, but he did. What we disliked about Thierry Henry at that time, it was he tried to be nice to the players after, you know, staying with them, talking to them, you know, go back to the dressing room and bye-bye. I liked the Roy Keane reaction after that game when he said, you know what, that can happen. So, you know, be quiet, shut up and keep on working hard to make things better. That's it. It's part of the game. The referee made a mistake. It was a trick from Henry, cheating if you want to say, but it is what it is. And it's not in the history of France, for sure. I guess it's more in the Irish past, but really, we don't care. We really don't care about it.
Well, I can tell you, Sam, Roy's view wasn't unanimously shared in the streets of Dublin.
No.
Particularly outside of the French embassy.
I don't think he'll be walking down Temple Bar for a few Guinnesses anytime soon. Because they were going bananas, ballistic. That's it. But there you go. I mean, it's just cheating, wasn't it?
That's a fun place, Temple Bar, isn't it?
Yeah. Guinness is a bit expensive now, but, you know.
Oh, well.
A few euros. Got up in a few nights down there.
Yeah, a bit old now for Temple Bar, aren't you?
No, I'm never too old.
I think so. I think you're out of place.
I used to go down there with the Celtic boys, my teammates. Oh, yes. My God.
Yep.
A long weekend in Dublin.
Good. Yep.
There's a lot of Guinness been drunk.
Oh, okay.
Craig, did you ever look up how wrong you were about the full 360 expression, ready to admit defeat? And in case you missed, this is when Craig was describing, and he's done it a number of occasions, but his latest one was Burnley, saying that Vincent Kompany has completed a full 360 at the club, which obviously means that really he's taken them back in the same direction they were going in the first place.
They've gone full circle.
Full circle's the same.
Listen, how come I've been doing this years and this only just came to light now?
Maybe because people haven't really been paying attention to what you're saying until now.
Well, there is a point. There is a point. I mean, what got me, was it you or Shaka?
Me, and then Shaka got very excited about it.
Well, he's normally sleeping during the show.
I know, Shaka was right on it. He was throwing you right under that bus.
So it's a 180?
Yes. Yeah.
So we do it's a 360 then, isn't it?
No.
Well, it is. If I say it's a 360, it's a 360.
Oh, right, there we go.
Right, there we are.
That seems reasonable.
Yes.
Sports Center producer even pulled me up on it.
Yes, he enjoyed it.
He loved it.
People enjoyed it, yep. There you go.
Hated the show.
Yes.
There's only one thing, switched the rest off.
Right, so it was terrible. Oh,
he's a Tottenham fan as well.
Yeah, exactly, and he probably likes Ronaldo. OK, final question. Ali, as this could well be Busquets' last year for Barca, how should they manage this transition? It's quite a serious question to end. Should they go for someone who's stylistically more similar to him, which is very rare in today's day and age, or should they get a more physical, modern-day defensive midfielder?
The latter.
Like who?
Well, that's the... Hey, Jude Bellingham would be
oh,
nice.
Oh, no.
No, look, you just don't see... The reason why Sergio Busquets still stands out is because you don't see players quite like him.
Yeah.
So calm on the ball, so intelligent in finding spaces, and a guy who's not all that athletic, still thriving. But he's now thriving given the fact that he's being protected. Protected by Gavi, protected by Pedri, protected by Frenkie de Jong. That's what has allowed Sergio Busquets to extend his performance with Barcelona as long as he has. I don't think that type of player is quite out there now. There is more of an emphasis of the back and forth, of the physicality, of the I'm going to go win balls and then drive at defenders. That profile of players, I think, is what Barcelona will go after, because I just don't think that there is a player quite like Sergio Busquets out there. And the profile of the tiki-taka is actually, that seems to be evolving as well. That seems to be changing. And Barcelona has to be able to keep up with how the game is changing worldwide.
That is
go
it.
For Rodri?
Sorry? Oh, sorry.
Would they go for Rodri?
They could.
Declan, I mean, don't laugh at this. Declan Rice?
I don't quite believe that he quite matches what...
Well, he'll go somewhere. Oh, Man United or...
Don't are we banging on about
that? No, but he's somebody who's just a defensive midfielder.
Where is Don?
Who's Don?
What's
he done? He's down, he's rewiring his internet.
Yeah, he's sorted out. Frank, anything you'd like to add before we leave?
No. Oh, yes, I have a question, Dan. Are you not a Real Madrid fan? Because you have a tendency to defend Real Madrid every time we talk about it.
Oh, you've noticed?
I don't really know. When have I defended Real Madrid today?
Well, when he said no Barcelona goal in the top 10, you say no. And when he said, when somebody said Bellingham at Barcelona, when Bellingham at Barcelona, say no, no. Yes. So I want to know, are you a Real Madrid fan or
I'm
not?
A big,
because I know
big,
everybody knows that you lived here.
They pay my wages for 5 years. Not you know, just, I've got an affinity
just,
towards
not just him. K as well.
There you are. Uh-huh. Yeah, there we are, both
you
of us.
You just can't let it go.
No.
Freddy Valverde, number one in the top 10 goals.
Yes.
That's a giveaway.
Voila. Voila. That's it.
I've got white paper. more of a giveaway. That's it.
You shouldn't be on Real Madrid games then.
Okay. I'll have that day off.
Does that mean that Kay's coming to work?
That is it. We are done then. ESPN FC is back on your screen.
And you don't like Ronaldo. Unbelievable. Oh, okay. You don't love
Ronaldo. Shut up, Frank. That's enough for you. Go sell some shoes.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.